I speak to quite a few people about this, and everybody is in the same pain barrier as what I was. And quite frankly, I saw it getting worse before it was getting better, and I didn't want to hang around. I just thought this is the opportunity to let go, and that I did.
It's been a few weeks now that we've been mulling over this question of hospitality and whether or not it is broken. We always hope not. We started the conversation with the story of Cornersmith in Sydney, a cafe that was very much part of people's lives. The fact that they announced their closure because it was simply too tough to do business really struck a chord with people in the Sydney community. That was it was a cafe that had had different iterations, but definitely seemed like it was a bit of a fixture, a leader even. In Melbourne, I feel like that watershed moment has been the announcement this week or the last few days that Ginger Boy was closing. Ginger Boy is a restaurant that's been around for 18 years. It's owned by one of the city's leading restaurateurs, Teague Izzard. And when Ginger Boy announced that it was calling in the liquidators, a lot of people found it really gutting. I would suggest none more so than Teague Izzard himself, who is today's guest on Dirty Linen. Teague, welcome to the show.
Hi, Denny. How are you?
Yeah, look, really good to have you on. And I'm sorry it's under such circumstances. Give us the lay of the land from your point of view.
Well, we traded through Christmas, which was okay. And then we started this year and didn't really get going. The problem was customers were drawing up and costs were going up as well. And it was a perfect storm come around March. And we decided late March after Easter, which was pretty bad, to close.
I mean, I guess these things don't come out of nowhere. And as you say, there was, you know, some disappointing months of trade. What were the things that were the real crunch for you?
There was nothing that really stands out. The real crunch probably was you can't operate like you did yesterday, like the same quality. You have to cut corners and cheat almost, and it wasn't what I wanted to do. So that was a difficult decision to make.
Yeah, look, I can imagine these are the sort of decisions that you never want to have to consider as a business owner who prides himself on quality. I mean, we heard that from, the Cornersmith crew, that, you know, if they had to buy the chicken that didn't feel right to them, you know, they wouldn't be able to sleep at night. So, I mean, what kinds of things were you looking at having to do?
Well, we're looking at cutting staff, full-timers, for more casual staff. That was the first thing. Changing suppliers, changing trading hours, a combination of things that was, you know, a step in the right direction for the business, but it wasn't the decision that I wanted to make.
Because what would that have meant for your customers?
Less of trading hours, and probably less of staff or fewer staff. And what else? That's about it, really.
I mean, you closed your flagship restaurant, Izzard, during COVID, during lockdown, in June. So just as we were coming out of lockdown number one, if I'm right.
Correct. The difference between Izzard and Ginger Boy was that Ginger Boy was more flexible and could pivot, and Izzard could not. And it was very hard to put Izzard into a box. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, you know, I feel like Ginger Boy has been part of so many people's lives for the two decades that it traded. But for people who perhaps aren't as familiar with the restaurant, give us a sense of what it was all about and why it was able to be more nimble than your flagship fine diner.
Well, it was designed to be a bit more fun, a bit more relaxed, a bit more casual, cheeky almost. and faster too. So we had two or three sittings, used to get do two or three sittings. Most recently it was probably 1.5. But it's different times, sitting times, different trading hours, different different offerings, banquet menu instead of degustation. We had a 35 offerings on the menu. It was a big a la carte menu. Ezard was 17 or 18. So it was a little bit just like Ezard, but very different.
Mm. I mean, the way that you're speaking about it, it sounds like the offering was very flexible for people. And, you know, I would have thought of Ginger Boy as a place where you could come for a big birthday banquet. You could also pop in for a couple of snacks and a drink. But in a way, does creating that flexibility for diners also make it tough for you when perhaps diners will only come for a snack and one drink? You know, they'll sit on a table but not spend as much.
Well, you're trying to hit your bet on your reputation, and that is providing an end-to-end service and delivery of a meal, and that's what you go for, and that's what you expect to come up with. Of recent weeks or months, I should say, we've seen it a little bit different. We've seen the spend drop overall. People just come in for a snack and a bite to eat. There's no minimum spend, so they get away with it. It's really hard. I feel like we're at the mercy of the guests, and the guest doesn't realise what goes into it back house.
I mean, that's undoubtedly true. But, I mean, is it the guest's business to know that?
No, it's not. It certainly isn't. But like I've been saying the last couple of days, we've seen nothing but increases. And that's got to come to a point where the menus have to go up. I remember Sydney in the year 2000 had the Olympics, and everybody put their prices up, and they stayed up. So does it take an international event or something like that? I don't know. But I do know that we do need to be level with the market, and that's upwards of $50 a main course.
I mean, it's a lot, isn't it, though? Because you can, I can hear you say that, and I think, yeah, well, I can see why that would be. I know that costs are going up every which way that you look. But when customers are also understandably watching what they spend because their power bills and insurance bills have gone up as well, like, what actually happens? Like, we can put prices up to whatever you want, but if the market won't bear it, is that the solution?
That's not really a solution. The only thing you can do is offer more than what you would do. So, for example, our $95 banquet menu, we had an offering for guests on a function for $75. So pre-theatre menu prices and on banquets. So you've got to hedge the bet.
Yeah. I mean, I just can really feel that struggle of trying to protect the business, but also trying to create value for customers at every step. But I mean, I guess the fact that you're closing means that it just wasn't possible to find the right balance.
Correct. Yeah.
How are you feeling, Teague?
I'm feeling that it was the right decision to make. I'm feeling a bit dismal about it. But I know that on the other side will be better, and I think that the next 3 months will see a bit of change. I think that prices may adjust themselves. Places will close, unfortunately, but we all have to learn that this is just a cycle we're in, and it's really dirty.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine gathering your resources and opening another restaurant?
I'm not never going to say never, never, but I plan to take a few months off and see some people and some faces and friends and family I haven't seen in years, and spend a bit of time in Queensland.
get out of it all.
Get it. That's right.
Calling in the liquidators, often businesses do that when they need to restructure, like there just isn't the money in this entity. And often it suggests that there's something, you know, a bit of a conversation with the ATO that hasn't gone as it might. I mean, is that the case with Ginger Boy?
No. The good thing about Ginger Boy was everything was up to date. Super, wages, suppliers were end of month, ATO, everything's up to date. So I've got no qualms with that.
Oh, I mean, that's really good that at least you can, you're sort of, you can close and walk away and feel pretty clear-headed about it in that sense.
Yep, that's right. So no one's owed too much. There's a few suppliers that will fall into some carnage in some areas there, but that's about it.
Okay. I mean, was that something that you were sort of working towards?
Yeah. A changeover or getting the liquidators to come in is generally better at the start of the month because you're starting your fresh cycle with your suppliers, with your staff, if you pay the monthly, that is, and everybody's generally paid up to date.
I mean, you're a really experienced operator. You've been in the industry for decades. I feel like if anyone was going to be able to find a solution to continue trading, you know, why wouldn't it be you? What do you feel like you're getting out earlier than others who perhaps should be thinking about making a similar decision?
Correct. I speak to quite a few people about this, and everybody is in the same pain barrier as what I was. And quite frankly, I saw it getting worse before it was getting better, and I didn't want to hang around. I just thought this is the opportunity to let go, and that I did. So I do hope that I'm ahead of the curve. I suspect that I probably am if I'm forecasting a pretty dismal winter.
Winter's always tough for restaurants. I mean, what's your prediction for this winter?
Well, I don't see it getting any better for Ospo, unfortunately. I would like to paint a brighter picture, but I can't. I think the next 3-4 months will be really challenging.
I mean, are there restaurants, like whether it's the type of restaurant, the location, the way it's structured, that you think might be more insulated from this crunch of increased costs and reduced spending? Like, are there any types of businesses that you feel are doing better?
Some of the newer restaurants are busier than us. I think being new certainly helps, being flavour of the month. And I would say that that's where the market is generally absorbed or headed. Yep.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because I mean, that's you can't do it. You can't stay new. So, but you know, this is a restaurants are generally a long game. So I don't know, how do you reconcile that?
Yeah, it's a hard one. But I just think that's the position everybody's in.
I mean, are you able to? You know, I get that you're pretty bruised at the moment, but are you able to look at what it is that you loved about hospitality? I mean, is the state of the industry now, has that sort of grounded out of you?
A little bit, yeah, it has. The thing, it's just not fun anymore. It used to be fun. You know, diners used to have a great experience from start to finish. Now they only eat half as what they did, drink as half as what they drunk. We used to be attractive and buoyant, and that's what was exhilarating. That was what was fun and crazy. You know, it was a great time. I used to have a manager in 2012, and I told him to wear long socks on Fridays and Saturdays, and he looked at me strangely, and I said, "Where else does the cash go?" Those days are gone.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, what has business been characterised more by in the last month's Teague? Has it been more like poring over spreadsheets and just looking at where you might conceivably make any further cuts?
Yeah, well, you can only cut as far as you can cut, I guess. We looked at many things. We even looked at some takeaway models across the road, signing another lease. We looked at a few things and we thought, well, this is what we do mainly. This is Ginger Boy. We're not going to do anything else, and we decided to close.
I mean, are you able to dine out with any joy and relish, or is it are you too burnt by restaurants?
At the moment, I'm feeling like I'm a little bit burnt, but I also feel that there's light at the end of the tunnel. I think we're in a cycle and it's round, and we'll get out of this.
So, I mean, what do you think will be, whether it's government levers or things that businesses can tackle themselves, what are the things that are going to create change and bring us around to a sunnier part of the cycle?
It's really up to the diners. I think they need to frequent their restaurants more often, particularly early in the week, because weekends don't feed a restaurant. The lights and the gas goes on 7 days a week. I think that in the CBD, they've got to lessen the parking restrictions, and working from home has really killed us, lunches and during the week. So working from home needs to be restructured. We need to get some office people or groups back into restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, so as you're talking, like some of what I'm thinking is, well, how can people spend more in restaurants when they're struggling themselves? I mean, these are bigger questions, aren't they?
They can't. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The only way is to give the diners some relief, and that was what Melbourne City Council did so well during COVID, was giving diners there were coupons, which were great, and that drove the customer to spend more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what advice could you give to operators who are, you know, looking at their own businesses and finding things really tough? You know, what advice would you give them in terms of enabling them to continue to trade, but perhaps knowing when also to call time?
Well, the thing is, I think, you know, where you need to be on the radar with your personal guarantees, because they can suck up a lot of cash. So be privy to what you've signed for in the past. Know what you owe to your landlord and your ATO tax-wise, and your suppliers and wages, and just know where you are and when you can pull the pin, I think is the biggest thing that restaurateurs need to realise. I think second to that is on the trading side of things. Look, I can say that main courses need to go up. I don't think the industry charges enough. I personally don't think that we get enough for what we do and for what we consume to keep lights on.
I don't know. I hear you, but I just come back to that thing, like if someone can't afford to pay $60 for a main course, what's going to happen?
Well, unfortunately, for most restaurants to have that experience from start to finish, you need to pay that price. You need the best staff. You need the best. You need to be attractive to staff. You need to pay the power, pay the gas, pay the electricity. You know, you need to stay open.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can understand why I feel like we were at a bit of an impasse and going around in circles, and that's actually why you've closed, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because you just come around. It's like it's fantastic to put your main course up to $60, but it doesn't really work if you've got an empty restaurant.
No. I think what Melbourne needs is a big international event like the Olympics were held in Sydney in 2000. We need something that's going to bring a lot of customers. We need something that's going to bring a lot of diners to the city, and it'll punch drunk or do something to the diners to inflate prices, and that's where they'll stay.
We'll take finally. I don't know how to end this conversation. I just feel like it's just sad, basically.
The positivity out of all of this is we're in a cycle, and it's only going to get better. There's blue sky coming.
Yeah. So what do you say? Is hospitality broken?
I would say it's not broken yet. We've got a little bit to go, but it certainly is on track to breaking itself, in my opinion. Yep.
So where's the blue sky come in?
Well, the curb is going to get better eventually, and I don't know, is it 2, 3, 4 years, 5 maybe? I'm sure, but something will happen to bring it back.
I think the scary thing with hospitality is that you can lose a lot of money really quickly if you're trading and you're not making a profit, right? So it's I can just, you know, my heart is gripped with this fear for people that they're waiting for things to turn around and they're losing money every hour, basically, in the meantime.
Yeah. And some people are, you know, custom for that. They're okay to lose money. But I certainly am not. I think a business needs to trade profitably. It needs to break even at the very, very least, not lose money.
Yeah. Well, Teague, enjoy your time in Queensland, you know, taking some big, deep breaths. I'm really, really sad that you've had to make this decision. I hope you can sit comfortably in the certainty that it was the right thing to do in this moment for this business and, you know, for yourself and your family. Really, really grateful to you for being so open with us on the podcast today.
Thank you so much.
This is Dirty Linen and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @dirtylinenpodcast. We can't wait to hear from you. This.